Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Julieta Talebi, and joining me in studio to tackle your questions are Nessun Nayar from Sasfin Securities and Rikus Reardas from PSG Wealth Sandton. If you'd like to send us those questions, please do. You can SMS 41392. You can email stockwatch at bdtv.co.za, or you can tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Rikus, Nessun, nice to see you both this evening. There was a strange color on my screen today. I didn't quite recognize it at first. Something looked different. You called your IT guy. We ended 1% up. Amazing. I mean, it really feels like we had a little reprieve after days of onslaught, didn't it?
It was, you know, and if you look at, for example, across the sectors, I mean, financials were up, industrials were up. Industrials is largely Naspers, and that makes sense, and some of the rand hedges. But the financial shares, which have really been sold off in the last 2 to 3 weeks, you know, showing some sort of bottoming out, if you can call it that. And then on the commodity side, I thought it was strange. There weren't any big moves in any commodity prices. In fact, a lot of them were flat to down. And yet some of the commodity companies recovered as well, probably from oversold positions.
Yeah.
I mean, that Brent price was up slightly. Sasol had a good day. considering Friday.
Well, better day, shall we say. I mean, it didn't actually make back what it lost on Friday, though.
No,
let's face it,
no,
only up 3.3%.
And I don't think it's going to. I mean, the only thing, when the results come out on the 19th of September, it's going to be a day a lot of investors wait for, because I think there's lots of unanswered questions about Sasol. And I think that hopefully the results provide us some clarity.
Rikus, before I ask you about the general markets, just on Sasol, apparently they had a meeting with fund managers after the Lake Charles, after the update that there was going to be another delay.
Yeah.
I just saw sort of strains of it coming through on Twitter this evening, but not a meeting with the general markets. Is that allowed? Can you do that?
Well, I suppose you can meet with your investors. It depends on what you tell them, apart from, sorry, we are late. I don't think you're not allowed to meet, but surely...
As long as you didn't disclose any information that's not available in the public.
Like
So that's an aside, but Sasol did delay their results. They are a little bit higher today, but do you think people will take advantage of a bounce in Sasol to sell ahead of the results coming out? Or do you think there's going to be a bit of a wait-and-see approach and we'll get maybe more clarity on Lake Charles, on the cash situation, on the dividend situation?
We're calling it Late Charles now.
Late Charles, yes. Do you think there's going to be sort of a Sasol treads water between now and the results?
I think it wouldn't be prudent to start buying the share right now. It's a good point you raise, whether we should be selling. If you're overweight, you'd need to trim. I don't think that the risk really warrants an overweight position in Sasol right now. But I'm imagining these results are going to shock a lot of people.
Mm. You know, Sasol has been such a stalwart of so many portfolios, whether it be institutional or private investors. I think there's, apart from... the prudent thing to do, which is when you're overweight, do not think about the fact that you've held it for the past 20 years or whatever. There's also that emotional attachment that, gosh, you know, hope against hope, maybe it's not as bad. I'm taking such a huge loss at the moment. Maybe I should wait. So I think those people who haven't got out yet are sort of locked into their own misery and will probably wait for... a bit more clarity and then make the decision that they should have been making.
They should have crystallized their misery, possibly.
Precisely.
My concern is the dividend, because, you know, if they pull back on the dividend for whatever reason, or they do any changes to the dividend policy, lots of shareholders hold Sasol because it was historically a very good dividend payer.
Yeah.
So don't believe that necessarily all the bad news is out there.
Okay.
You need to be very careful.
Yeah. And Rikus, your thoughts on the general market? It was interesting to see, as Nessun said, gains across the board, notwithstanding that the Rand was weaker today, which you might have thought would have affected financial and industrial shares, well, except for Naspers or the Rand hedges. Is that also an indication of a bottom where, with the conditions you think haven't changed, the currency is still stacked against you, and yet there's a bit of a relief rally?
I think what Nessun said is pretty accurate. In other words, we've had a huge sell-off over the past 4 weeks almost. And if you just take a look at the technicals, the sort of 200-day moving averages, and you see where banks are versus that sort of standard. We're about 10-15% below that. So it's gone too far too fast. Okay. And it's no wonder that there is a bit of recovery, and any excuse will do, whether it be Trump saying that, well, we are still talking, and everybody says, oh my goodness, you know, there's a bit of positive news coming through. So at the moment, I think it's a pure knee-jerk reaction. I don't think anything has changed fundamentally. But certainly a lot of these things, including resources, are 15% below their highs, so to speak. So there has to be some covering going on, some people trying to catch a falling knife, and looking for an excuse just for that bit of a bounce.
And there also seems to be some expectation that central banks the world over, who will, central bank governors will be gathering in the Jackson Hole for the annual jamboree this week, are going to come up with some sort of plan to inflate the world economy and, I suppose, keep the liquidity taps open. I don't know. Do you think that's a sensible expectation?
I think so. The reason is inflation remains very much in check. And if you look at Europe, for example, we've got negative interest rates in Europe. And that is not discouraging, people from buying bonds. So how do you discourage people from buying bonds and put money into the mainstream economy is you just give them more money. Yeah. At some point in time, they can't take money and go and invest it at negative yields. And negative yields in Europe is a problem for America, because invariably the Americans will import much, much lower rates, which is not good. You want some inflation to come in, because it's healthy for the economy. It shows that the economy is robust. I think the trade war is probably going to have a bigger effect on China than what we think. If you looked at what's happening in Hong Kong right now, I think Hong Kong is using the fact that China is probably at its weakest that they imagine it being financially in the last 20 years. And so, this is a good opportunity for all these protests. Whether anything is going to come out of it, I don't know. But, if you try and read between the lines, I think things in China are not so good. And that might actually cause global growth, to come down even further.
Yeah.
So I think, monetary policy has helped at least keep the global market afloat for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
So it may not be a bad thing. And there's nothing else really that they can do.
I don't know, but how does this all end? Or does it just never end? We're just kind of in this long continuum of negative yielding bonds and rates at historic lows that just never climb higher.
Well, we can ask the Japanese how they got out of it, except they haven't. So that is a problem. I think Jackson Hole, the expectation is there, but that's nothing new. So why are markets rallying? I think the only thing there is the hope that the whole trade issue will be resolved sooner than one thinks, although there's no expectation that it's going to be resolved anytime soon. And frankly, as you said, with negative yields, where else are you going to go for some kind of return? And unfortunately, it still is and remain the stock market, so there's just a lot of expectation built into it.
Yeah.
So we must get some kind of fiscal reform going, whether it be in Europe, whether it be in even in the states itself, because throwing money at the problem obviously is not going to help in the short term, whereas a more positive, shall we say, government action, whether depending on where you are, whether it's Europe or China, that's the kind of move that will hopefully get some real growth going.
Yeah. To stocks. Hi, gang. Does anyone know how the NASPAS NewCo listing will affect NASPAS's weighting in the top 40, and will NewCo or Prosus take NASPAS's place in the index?
Yes, so I think the NASPAS share price will drop by 1,000-odd rand, okay, from current levels. And that may have an impact on its weightings. But the weightings are calculated, not as one would intuitively think they're calculated by the JSE. So will it have any effect on the weighting? Yes, that's one of the main reasons for doing this transaction. NASPAS will have less of an effect.
It'll still be the biggest on the index.
Yeah. What I'm more concerned about is the activity, the trading volumes. NASPAS is comfortably 25-30% on average of trading volumes. And if the interest in NASPAS being generated out of foreigners is actually because of Prosus, which is really the case, will foreigners then take their trading over to Amsterdam? And what will happen to the level of trading on the JSE? I think for me, that's a much more important thing to look at.
Yeah. Mm. Rikus, do you think that's going to be a profound impact?
Valid point there. but yeah, I think the weighting will obviously depend on the value that Prosus gets listed, because that's going to tell you what the weighting of Naspers is going to drop by, and we don't quite know that yet. And yes, as you said, it's going to, you know, there's going to be a shift of money flow from Naspers being the only vehicle to Prosus itself. So that might have a general effect on the value traded in our market, and obviously then the enthusiasm that there is towards our market.
Yeah. Another question from this viewer, and we were talking about the financial services companies, how they did have a bit of a recovery today, asking what are the fundamental risks that banks face over the next 12 months, and what would be a worst case scenario?
Listen, I think that the main risks banks have, if you look at what drives banks' earnings, on the top line, it's net interest income. Okay, so if interest rates continue to drop, that income invariably squeezes. Will the loan books grow? I don't think banks are too keen to grow the level of loans that they have. So immediately you've got pressure on the top line. They have addressed that. If you look at the last set of banks' results that have come out, three of the big four, they're moving a lot more towards unsecured lending, which is a higher margin product. So maybe in order to mitigate the yield compression or the margin compression, they're moving towards changing the mix of products that they have. But the big issue that stands out for banks is costs are growing. There is no abatement on the cost side. And I think the longer the economy doesn't grow, the longer the economy stalls, the harder it is for banks to actually grow earnings. Earnings are either going to be flat or they're going to come down. And of course, you know, credit loss ratios are going up as well.
Yeah, and then today you had the debt review bill, or you had it signed into law, and banks saying this is going to impede credit provision to the economy. Although Capitec actually put out a release saying that they have worked towards this and they don't feel that it's going to impact their business, interestingly enough.
Seeing that it is a huge part of the market, I would hope that they have looked at it. As for the other major banks, I think considering the market segment is going to affect, and you're right, as the banks are moving into that insecure lending space, but I think a lot of the highly indebted accounts which will get some kind of relief has probably been written off already as far as the banks are concerned. So what I'm more worried about are the credit retailers and how they are coping with their outstanding book on that. I think they are possibly far less prepared for this kind of thing than the banks. But as you've said, cost-wise, banks have cut as far as they can. And if you're sitting in a low interest rate environment, I mean, your earnings is not going to go anywhere. And maybe that explains some the kind of valuations that they are sitting at, which is really at I don't know when last it was this low, probably about 2009 or something like that.
Yeah, but I mean, were earnings like this? I suppose 2009 you would have had was there a retraction? Did earnings collapse in a heap? I can't remember, actually.
It was only temporary.
It was only temporary.
Remember, the government had firepower at that stage. There was a fiscal response to an impending.
Yeah, I mean, those were in the days after we'd had a budget surplus.
Yes.
Remember those days?
Yes.
My gosh, we're really old. Well, we leave it there for the moment. If you'd like to send us questions, please do. You can SMS us 41392, or you can email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za. Welcome back. Let's have a look at what's happening to U.S. markets at the start of this trading week. The S&P 500 up 1.33%, the Nasdaq up 1.6%, and the Dow Jones trading 1.1% higher. Across the Atlantic, it was a pretty similar picture. The FTSE 100 gaining 1%, the CAC 40 up 1.3%, and the DAX up by a similar margin. So everyone's starting off the week on a much sounder footing, it feels, than this time last week. And still with me in the studio are Nessun Nayar from Sasson Securities and Rikus Redis from PSG Wealth Santon. We have been talking about the dogs of the JSE, Sasol being one of them. We haven't talked about Discovery yet, but we will in a moment. But there's been a question on whether Aspen and Sasol are a buy at these levels. I think Sasol, we said,
We would wait for the results.
Wait for the results. Unless, Rikus, you have a different opinion, or you just don't go there at all.
No, I don't go there at all.
What about Aspen? Aspen today was... Aspen today fell a further 5%. So it's back to 65 Rand, mm-hmm. back below, firmly below 70 Rand a share. This has been a spectacular unwind and a sort of devastating destruction of value.
That graph also doesn't do it justice because it's on a
log scale. Yeah, okay. So we'll bring up a sort of a 5-year chart which shows exactly where it's come from.
The drop is a lot more dramatic.
Yes, I mean, that looks like quite a gentle slide into the abyss. But any particular reason why it's down another 5% today?
You know, somebody said on Twitter the other day, gear today, gone tomorrow. And I think that's the problem with both Sasol and Aspen, is debt. I think Sasol's market cap is almost equal to its debt at the moment. It's you don't want to sit in a high debt situation with
160 billion.
With a lower cash flow. You are in
lower
trouble.
Lower cash flow and also a currency that's going against you, as the Rand is going against, certainly against Aspen, because it's got euro-denominated debt, doesn't it?
It'll have debt in multiple
currencies.
But the concern with Aspen is obviously NHI, I think, is going to have a big impact on them.
Yeah.
But I think Rikus is right. The debt levels at Aspen at 40 plus billion Rand is really unsustainable when you're operating cash flow. You know, the market's kind of pricing in perhaps even some sort of rights issue or some sort of long-term addressing of the debt issue right now. And as much as it has been a darling of the exchange for many, many years, at 65 Rand, I mean, I think that the last time I remember a price like that is easily 9-10 years ago. You know, it really is a dramatic fall.
Mm. Would you be going anywhere near it? Or?
We got out of it, fortunately, at not very good levels. I think we got out of it about 180, 190. When the first set of results came out, it was a decision that we'd taken at the time. But I don't see a reason to buy a stock just because the price has gone to, you know, a level it was 9 years ago. You buy a stock because you have some sort of confidence on its earnings trajectory. Right now, Sasol and Aspen, we just don't have that ability.
Yeah.
And it's quite interesting because Aspen, you know, had come down quite a lot and then it recovered to about 100, 110 Rand and it held there for quite a while.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was confidence that they were going to sell the nutritionals business and that sale came through. There was a little bit of a fillip. And then from that point, it's just gone one way. Rickerson, I suppose, technically, is there any sign of a bottom in that chart?
You know, I'm just sort of, as it steps down, you just use your little magic and your little graphs and whatever you think. Well, 60 Rand, obviously. You know, it will go down until it stops going down and then starts trending sideways, hopefully, and then start going up. So in both Sasol and Aspen's cases, you know, it might be the bottom now, a month's time or whatever, but I can't see a sharp recovery in the price because something operationally is going to change in either business. There's just too much uncertainty. Aspen, as far as debt's concerned, Sasol, never mind its own operational problems, but also in the market of the product itself, whether it be oil, which is not looking good at the moment, the oil price itself, and obviously chemicals. If you just take a look at what's being shipped in America, that market is under pressure.
Yeah.
So, you know, why go and invest in a company that's got an operational issue, Aspen and Sasol, plus factors which is beyond its control, whether it be interest rates or the market of your physical product.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. There are other questions asking whether Aspen's reached the bottom. But
one way of looking at it is like, say you want to invest in Aspen and you think it's going to reach 440, which is its previous high, at some point in time in the future. If you buy it now, you're running a lot of risk. If you wait for a recovery to, say, 120, okay, then you would have done, okay, maybe in percentage terms you wouldn't have done so well, but in Rand terms, you'd have done more or less the same. But if you invested 120 on the way up, you're actually doing it at a lot less risk than what you would be doing it at now. So, I mean, the same thing was true of Anglo's a few years ago. It came
Kumba.
To 55, Kumba.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot of risk right at the bottom, and people who were prepared to take on that risk were rewarded. But if you bought it on its way up at Anglo's at maybe 100, 120, there wasn't that much risk associated with it anymore. Sure, your return is slightly less, but it's
still
equivalent.
Yeah.
That's such an important point because I think there are two kinds of shall we say, fundamental investors. They're the those that think, well, let's buy it on the way down because we think that there's a heck of a price recovery yet. And possibly people like me who are too old and boring and say, I'd rather wait for it to go up. Now, talking about Aspen, a very recent example that I can use is Impala. In other words, it doesn't matter whether you bought it at, what was the low in Impala?
13 or something.
No.
Impala Platinum was below 20.
That's right.
It might have been on my 10 to me.
See what I mean? Now, do you buy it at 25, sit through the pain, whether it be yourself or your clients in my case, of going all the way down to 13, or do you wait for it to go to sort of turn around? It's sitting at 70 Rand at the moment. I think to me the answer is obvious. I'd rather wait for a trend to turn, and that's because I'm a trend investor, than try and say, well, you know, it might go lower, but it's a good value at this point, because it might go lower. If it does go lower, it affects performance, it affects your sleeping
psyche.
Pattern, your psyche, in other words.
So, it's very important to have a good sleeping pattern.
So, yeah, I would rather wait for the shares to return to its precise rightful owner right at the bottom and then join the upswing.
And what about Discovery? Discovery, I suppose you need to know what ails them. I suppose Aspen, we have maybe a clearer idea. Sasol, we know. Discovery is mysterious. And your colleague David Shapiro says, you know, the market has a way. The information gets out into the market.
Assimilating all the information into the price.
It's not insider trading, but it is information, you know, so I guess he's an efficient market
theorist.
But Discovery down another 8%
there
today.
Are sellers out there, so that tells you, because it recovered to about 110 and then it came back today. On Friday it recovered. I think a lot of people are talking about the medical aid business, which has been the cash cow for all the other businesses that Discovery had incubated over the years. And right now NHI puts a question mark as to the visibility or the certainty of that cash flow going forward. And if there's uncertainty about that, there has to be uncertainty as to whether Discovery can fund all its other businesses. And I think those people that have had a great run on Discovery, and they're, you know, 10 years ago this was 20 or 25 rand a share, you know, saying, listen, you know, we've had a good run of it, out of it, let's take some off the table right now. But, you know, with the volatility we've seen in the share price, I wouldn't be one that would be comfortable right now, just because of the uncertainty to invest in the share.
Yeah, Rickus, do you feel the same way?
Yeah, it's the same way. You know, what one can say, okay, you know, the price reflects what's known in the market, but there's also a liquidity issue, or shares traded, if I can call it that. Prices tend to follow liquidity on the way up and down, and normally at the bottom, all of a sudden liquidity dry up because there's not enough people to sell anymore, as liquidity dries up when the price is too high. There's not enough people to buy anymore. And at the moment, volumes are still massive on this thing. So there's still that rebalancing going on as to at what level do your buyer and seller come into more of an equilibrium. And I can't see that happening at the moment. So I certainly don't want to go against that trend and say, well, I'm going to be the clever one and buy right at this price.
Yeah, okay. Some very good stock market theory coming out of the two of you this evening. And just the last question before we get to stock picks. Any views on Ascendus? When the NAV is 14 Rand and the price is 4 Rand 50, can we buy?
Maybe they should change the name to Descendus. I'm
just kidding. you've been waiting to do that, haven't you?
Listen, I'd stay away from healthcare stocks right now. Just have a look at Netcare. I mean, when last have you seen Netcare around 15 Rand?
You haven't, I don't, okay. I don't believe.
So, you know, there's something happening here that is, you know, the available information in the market is telling us something that even if we don't fully understand it, we don't need to be the brave one out and start taking on the risk. There's plenty of other people out there.
It needs to be a bit of a coward sometimes in the stock market.
It does. It does. Wait for things to settle a little bit. Let's see where we go with the NHI. Let's see what happens to Ascendus in this restructuring that they've done and how it turns out in results. Because every time there's restructuring, you know, results are incomprehensible. If there's an opportunity to buy it in the future, it will present itself to you at a time when it's easier to make a decision. Yeah. Right now, it's not easy.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to leave it there and get your stock picks. Rickus, yours is Sirius. It's a real estate company, but it's got a lot of German retail exposure.
Basically German, and situated around the seven biggest centra in Germany. And what got me thinking about Sirius is that Germany, is almost sitting in the same situation as we are. Business and consumer confidence is as low as it's been in the past decade. There is fears of a recession coming through. There's doubt about economic policy going through. But I think the one thing in Germany's favor is that they will actually be able to do something to help themselves. Historically, they've always looked out for number one, as their neighbors have found out during the years. They will, in the end, whether it be monetary or fiscal reform or both,
they'll take the medicine.
They will take the medicine and do something about it. And I think Sirius, as an owner of obviously office retail, but also a lot of industrial manufacturing type of properties, and considering where they are as a company, cash flush, rental income, NAV all going up, can take advantage of lower prices right now and will benefit on that kind of rebound that's bound to come in the next 12, 18 yeah. months, hopefully.
And I have to say, the chart looks amazing, going from you know, bottom left, yeah. top right. Yeah. Nathan, you're buying a share called Equinix. What is it?
Equinix is the largest provider of cloud infrastructure in the world. So we all know about Microsoft Cloud and Google Cloud, and we understand that a lot of services are now being hosted on the cloud, and a lot of people are using the cloud for various things. But the cloud is actually not actually a cloud. It's just an off-site location where the servers are, and somebody has to provide that server architecture, the electricity generation that goes with it, the security that goes with it. And Equinix is the largest provider of that throughout the world. Hmm. It's listed on the NASDAQ, and I think if you believe that cloud is a, you know, is a kind of like a structural growth story, this is a share that you can look at as well.
Yeah. Well, those are two very encouraging charts, I have to say, on a slightly more encouraging day. Nathan Rikus, thanks very much for joining us this evening. Nathan Nair is from Sasfin Securities. Rikus Riedis is from PSG Wealth Santon. And we'll be back with Stockwatch tomorrow night at 7:30. Have a good evening. I'm going to leave it there and get your stock picks. Rikus, yours is Sirius. It's a real estate company, but it's got a lot of German retail exposure.
Basically German and situated around the seven biggest centra in Germany. And what got me thinking about Sirius is that Germany is almost sitting in the same situation as we are. Business and consumer confidence is as low as it's been in the past decade. There is fears of a recession coming through. There's doubt about economic policy going through. But I think the one thing in Germany's favor is that they will actually be able to do something to help themselves. Historically, they've always looked out for number one, as their neighbors have found out during the years. They will, in the end, whether it be monetary or fiscal reform or both,
They'll take the medicine.
They will take the medicine and do something about it. And I think Sirius, as an owner of obviously office retail, but also a lot of industrial manufacturing type of properties, and considering where they are as a company, cash flush, rental income, NAV all going up, can take advantage of lower prices right now and will benefit on that kind of rebound that's bound to come in the next 12, 18 yeah. months, hopefully.
And I have to say, the chart looks amazing, going from you know, bottom left, yeah. top right. Yeah. Nathan, you're buying a share called Equinix. What is it?
Equinix is the largest provider of cloud infrastructure in the world. So we all know about Microsoft Cloud and Google Cloud, and we understand that a lot of services are now being hosted on the cloud, and a lot of people are using the cloud for various things. But the cloud is actually not actually a cloud. It's just an off-site location where the servers are, and somebody has to provide that server architecture, the electricity generation that goes with it, the security that goes with it. And Equinix is the largest provider of that throughout the world. Hmm. It's listed on the NASDAQ, and I think if you believe that cloud is a, you know, is a kind of like a structural growth story, this is a share that you can look at as well.
Yeah. Well, those are two very encouraging charts, I have to say, on a slightly more encouraging day. Nathan Rikus, thanks very much for joining us this evening. Nathan Nair is from Sasfin Securities. Rikus Riedis is from PSG Wealth Santon. And we'll be back with Stockwatch tomorrow night at 7:30. Have a good evening.